Episode 51, we've passed the hurdle of the 50, and here we go.
Over the hill.
Scream 6 with all of the horrible things. And it's only a little over a year ago that we were talking about Scream 5.
Which, right there, that's impressive that they turned out a whole additional movie.
It's shocking. Like, especially given I like the majority of what happened to this one. I felt like it was fresh, and I'm surprised that it did happen within a year. Do you think another one in another year?
Yeah, I do. I honestly do. I think they've got a really good formula going as far as the filmmakers. I mean, that's got to excite the studios, but as a fan, it's also dangerous.
Yes, I would agree with you there. I know they want to try and bring back Neve Campbell. I think she would be silly not to get back involved, given that this did make the most money out of all the streams ever, right? And it's opening weekend at least, so it definitely
In Neve Campbell's defense, though, I think the reason she didn't join on was financial. The compensation wasn't as much as I think that she was asking for or that she deserved.
And I mean, that's fair. She made the series. Her name is, you know, synonymous with Scream. At the same time, did you miss her?
No.
I did not either. I don't necessarily know what else they could do with Sydney. She was mentioned.
Exactly.
She was given homage to. We know that. I like the way that Courtney Cox put it. It's like, Sydney deserves her happy ending. And I was okay with that. Or Gail Weddage, rather. So, I don't know. I think it would be forced to bring her back unless it, I don't know, was something really interesting and new. Because she's married to Patrick Dempsey's character from 4. Am I right about that?
I believe so. I believe you're right. And I think you nailed it. I think you nailed it by saying they have exhausted her character. And maybe, yes, put her on the sidelines for right now. Bring her back when it's like a surprise. I think that would make fans a lot more, you know, satisfied when they don't see it coming.
Yeah, I completely agree. And frankly, I don't see this ending. The Scream series can go on and on. But let's not bury the lead here. This is the sequel within a requel. And what caught me a little off guard, I guess I want to say, is how much it mimics Scream 2. In a lot of different ways, right? We're talking about specifically scenes that mirror what happens in Scene 2, motives of killers that occur in Scream 2 as well. Did you like that it was a retread of visuals and motives? Or
You know, I certainly didn't have any issues with it. I think I realized why they did it, because they took the franchise out of its hometown. I think something needed to be familiar for the audience to kind of ground it and root it in the franchise's storyline or just even universe. But you're right. I mean, you've got film school students. You've got a theater, but it's a movie theater that there's scenes in. There are a lot of things that mirror Scream 2. But I don't think they were as hitting you over the head, like obvious as I think they were almost like tributes.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it took what was in Scream 2, which to me is kind of one of the more bottom of the barrel Scream, and it is better than that. It amplified it. It took what worked in it, and I think, you know, hyperbolize it, run it up a little bit, run it up a notch. But let's keep in mind Scream 2 as we kind of go through this one. And perhaps we can start with the opener, because of course the Scream teasers, these intros, are such a big part of what makes these movies work. And you're never ever going to come close to what was done with Drew Barrymore in the first, because you just can't beat that.
And I think they are make or break
character in Drew. When we don't really even know her, but she does so well. We're so parasocially attached to her, having seen Drew grow up and such, that we actually do care for her in a way that I'm not sure they can ever do again. But we do have a fun new victim here, the girl from Ready or Not, who's
Samara Weaving, huge fan.
Yeah. I like her a lot, too. I think she's really interesting. I know her from Ready or Not, and specifically Nine Perfect Strangers. What else do you know her from?
Oh, she was in The Babysitter, the Netflix movie.
Yeah.
She was in the Daniel Radcliffe movie, Guns Akimbo, which is really fun. I think she's also done some other dramatic stuff, not necessarily in just horror, but I think she... Oh, she was in the Bill and Ted remake, or Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Yeah, no, she's a lot of fun, and yeah. I'm glad that she stuck with her Australian accent here, which is natural.
Yes.
And so instead of going to see the incarnation of Stab, as we do in the second movie, Scream 2, we now have a film professor. We've seen film students before, but now we have an associate professor of film studies who's specifically honing in on 20th century slasher films. And it's really fun because she's kind of like the more intellectual version of our Jamie Kennedy or our Mindy, you know, in that she's over the phone with our would-be killer, you know, all the tropes in the, you know, the masked killer, the final girl, the rules of no splitting up, no sex, don't answer the phone sort of thing. So, you know, we relate with her immediately because, you know, she knows what we know sort of thing. What did you think of the whole text message, then talking on the phone transition?
I think it was fun. I think it was, you know, sort of how do we do another version of Drew Barrymore? We show the audience we can still use the phone as a device, but then we also bring it into our present day by adding text messages, because no one really, he even says, can I call you? Because no one talks on the phone anymore. So you needed to establish, well, okay, what's going on here? And I thought it was actually really fun how the killer kind of plucked her out of this bar by playing ignorant as to where, you know, he was.
Right.
And got her to go into an alley.
The irony, right, of someone who teaches, you know, horror.
Yes,
then being sucked into the alley. A small alley, too. You know, this is just a little dinky dog that, you know, she still... gets slaughtered pretty brutally. It was maybe one of the most brutal, other than Drew Barrymore. Which other intro opener comes close to the ferocity in which we have this ghost face killer?
I just want to refer to it as last year's version, you know, Scream 5. You got Jenna Ortega alone in the house, which was also another variation of Drew Barrymore. But do you remember they really showed the knife, like, where it was going, like into the leg, and
they've
dialed up the whole knife impact sound. I think it's gotten better over this whole franchise where, it adds more impact, and it really, the audience was like oohing and eyeing, like, ooh, you know, when you hear those stabs. Right.
And then, of course, we have our expectations subverted. We're going to go over Mindy's whole spiel later when she breaks down what it means to now be a franchise. But the rules that she talked about, the subversion, we get immediately here, because never, ever have we seen who the killer was right off the bat. And granted, this isn't our end-all, be-all killer of this movie, but I was kind of taken aback at first, because this is one of our longer openers as well, right? Because then we follow this killer back to his home.
Right.
Right. Have we watched Servant or talked about that? Because this guy, who's our first killer here, is from Servant. That's what I know him from. And I really like him because he's really meek, like, nice character in that. And to see him in such a divergent role, Tony Revolori, I guess, is Jason Carvey.
Yeah, he really broke through when he appeared in the Spider-Man movies. I just recently watched him in the new Willow series on Disney Plus.
Oh, okay, right on.
R.I.P.
I forgot he was.
I think he is very, very charismatic on camera. It was really fun to see him when the mask comes off, which was also really interesting when you're watching this intro sequence and then you actually see him take the mask off, which, you know, that never happens in this franchise unless it's at the very end in a reveal moment. This is the opening sequence. So it really kind of set things up nicely as far as, here we go, he's not really, you know, we've got a copycat killer here, or, you know, whatever. You know, I did want to touch on before I forget. Do you still think, I believe his name is Roger, the actor who plays the Scream voice?
Yes.
Do you still think
Roger
it's
Jeff.
Effective? Yeah. Do you think it still works?
I don't
works?
Know how you'd do a Scream movie without that voice, honestly. I mean, granted, Scream 3 was so fun and that the killer was able to mimic the voice of those within the movie because it had this mimicker. But I don't know. I just feel like it's so tied in. And it's like having Jason without the hockey mask sort of thing. You just
right.
can't do it with a machete. It's just so baked in now. Like taking it, it's not as frightening anymore?
Well, no. I mean, I completely agree. I absolutely love his voice in this role. But what I am thinking is it's almost getting, I want to equate it to what happened to Freddy Krueger over time. Freddy Krueger became more hilarious over time. Less terrifying, more hilarious. You know, it's like we're in on the joke, we've heard it. So when I'm listening to him, I don't know, it's almost like it's broken through the fourth wall and it like no longer, it's entertaining to me, but it's not scary. And it's almost like, you couldn't scare me by doing that voice anymore. It's just comical to me.
I hear what you're saying. I think they are at the risk of being a little self-parodic at this point. But I argue in the first intro scene, to move from his normal voice to that was effective. I think if they're going to continue to use this voice, you have to do it in a manner in which the transition or however it's done is different. And I felt like that one was because we were on board with her. We knew it was coming, obviously, as the audience, but to go from such a sweet guy to know he was luring her in, I think that was his real voice, the actors. So like go from that truth to just using it as an effect and then going back, like seeing who he really was. I did enjoy that. But you're right. After that, knowing what we know about the big bads at the end, why would they use it necessarily? I mean...
It's just fan serving, you know?
Right. Yes, I completely agree there. Yeah, that's a good question to bring up. I'm not exactly sure. I just don't know what you do.
I know. You have to do it.
Because that was effective when you didn't know if it was the real person talking to you or not. But
yeah. Now it's just, it's part of the costume.
Let's talk about the Easter eggs we get here with Jason. So it's interesting. Immediately, we have Jason and his boyfriend, Greg, who's not there. We don't see him. He calls up and he's messing with him, or so he thinks, as Ghostface. Did you buy necessarily that he would think Greg was this playfully sadistic sort of thing? I mean, granted, they're...
No.
But it seemed...
Yeah, to really kind of switch on a dime type of a thing.
Yeah.
It was a bit...
Struggle with...
Strange. Is it in this moment, or is it in a couple scenes later where we actually see Jason Voorhees on TV?
Not only Jason Voorhees, but he's watching Jason Takes Manhattan.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was just like, well, one, that's kind of been, that was probably hard to get the rights to that. But two, it was like on the nose, but still very fun.
Yes. I did enjoy it. I actually, in the moment, I wasn't sure it was Manhattan, did research, then realized I'm like, oh, spot on. The character's name is Jason, too. They were stewing in horror in this one. And Scream is always meta, right? But when we get to the train scenes, you can definitely see how much horror is.
Oh my God, yes. We will get to that. But to talk about this apartment scene, I thought it was really, really cool when he places the ghost face mask back onto its pedestal with the blood now added to it. And you can see that there are other variations, which, you know, sets up a lot within this whole storyline. But man, are these guys committed.
They were. Okay, and also, we're kind of like bearing the fact that this guy, Jason, and I don't know about Greg, but he was in a class then with Tara, our Jenna Ortega, because we see them on the street.
Right.
It's Halloween. I'm trying to think, were there other Scream set on Halloween?
Yeah, I want to say that the first one, when they're all... at the house party watching a scary movie, I think that was the alternative to going trick-or-treating, but...
Was it?
That's a great question.
For some reason, I feel like this is the only time it's overtly Halloween. I think it was fall zone in the first one. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. We have actual Halloween, and it being Halloween playing such a large role in not being able to determine who is Ghostface and who's not. Granted, was
sure.
Seeing Joker, that scene on the train was very reminiscent of everyone having the Joker face.
Right.
Joaquin Phoenix version of it. Anyways, okay, let's jump forward, unless you want to say anything else about that intro.
Mm-hmm. No. Let's go.
All right, where do we move? We're moving into New York. We're no longer in Woodsboro, right? And we have a Tara at a Halloween party who's obviously not handling what has happened to her very well.
No.
Burying her sorrows in booze and potentially what would have been met. What did you think about our introduction to the new Tara, as well as the introduction to our new potential killer, the baby-faced Ethan in his little robot costume at this party?
Right. Well, you know, it was a really interesting. I mean, as soon as you meet this new guy, if you're a fan of the Scream franchise, you have to question him, which they do, which I like that they do at a certain point. But it was like, I kind of wish there was another way of doing it. I mean, were you at all questioning this character when you're introduced to Ethan?
Honestly, I did not. I did not think it was him. I'm gonna be honest with you. He was that can't be said. Mara totally pinned him early, but for some reason I just thought no. In looking back now, I see why it had to be him, because when Mindy talks so much about the inverse of characters being the killer, and how ultimately in all the previous ones the rule is if you're virgin you die. Well, in this one he makes very clear that he's the virgin, which means he's going to be the killer. And I didn't quite get that, because he's very much
that was
good. I mean, I'm going to die a virgin, and that should have been a red flag immediately, because it was right around the time that she's talking about how it's the opposite of what you would expect. Now that you're right. This is a question that I had that I haven't seen for in over a year now. Does four get that meta in like a quadrology? Does it talk about what it is in the same way every single other one has? Because four is kind of the anomaly, I feel like, and that it was meant to be a new trilogy but didn't have enough clout.
Right.
Two.
I mean, four may be the most meta, aside from, you know, I mean, obviously you have the Stab franchise within the movies earlier than that, but in four you have the fake openings.
That is very true. Okay. But I thought it was interesting that now it's considered a franchise. I don't know, I just like, what do you say about it next? Do we even deal with that sort of angle anymore? And if Mindy was right about who the killer was in this one, and she made very explicit at the end, like, I missed the monologue again. I mean, Mindy is the
director.
Am I right? I don't want to, like, go too off course here, but she's...
Mindy's the new what?
She's the best character, I would argue.
I agree.
You know, the Jamie Kennedy who doesn't die.
Right.
Yes, so I'm just wondering, because they make very explicit in this one that Stu Mocker is dead, but at the same time, that is her ultimate theory, that Stu might... Is there any chance that Stu comes back to the next one? Is there any chance in hell he's alive? Or am I just dreaming?
I think you might be dreaming. I mean, as a fan, obviously I want him to come back, but I just don't know how you do it. I mean, is it like a witness protection thing? Like, do they fake his death and move him into witness protection?
Yeah. I know.
That's the only way you could really do it.
Far-fetched desire, but I can't help wanting to see
why,
you know, not in the way that we see Billy either. This is one of my biggest complaints about the newest ones, is her being haunted by Skeet Ulrich. Don't like,
right? Well, I completely agree. In like the technology is good but not great still, and it seems very video game-ish to me. But having said that, spoiler, I think that they are going to leave it after this movie.
I sure hope so. Because at the end, that's the sense that you get. She drops the mask. She's leaving.
That's what I'm alluding to.
Every set. Before we start getting into theories, because there are some theories out there, too, I want to draw upon that are really interesting, and they make too much sense that I hope that it isn't the case, because it would make too much sense. Let's just kind of go through some of these kills if you're down. Because
please.
From my perspective, this is one of the best screams in terms of our action sequences, our death sequences. Some of the most tense moments, I would say, in any of the movies, hands down, and they approached the deaths of some of these characters in ways that we haven't seen before that were really, a lot of it had to do with being in the city, too.
That's what I was just going to say. I think by breaking from Woodsboro and being in the city, it gave them freedom to try so many new things, like the bodega scene.
Yes, the bodega scene's amazing. But yes, so we mentioned how ultimately Greg and Jason are, you know, killed. Jason, kind of a boring way, and then we have the chopped up body in the fridge. Did love that
in the fridge.
I'm completely honest with you. I like the hot and cold thing hanged up, but I didn't love that. The next person that dies is Laura. Is that right? Who's our next death?
Well, yeah, the roommate, right? Because it sets things into motion with the father.
Right.
Dermot.
Yes, Quinn. Quinn is the roommate who seemingly dies here. But actually, we are kind of jumping the shark in that her boyfriend dies. Because we do see her boyfriend all chopped up in the tub. Don't actually see his death. We just see his body. So he dies for Quinn, in quotation marks. And additionally, some other rando girl off screen has to have been killed by our killers because she's a replacement
decoy body,
right?
Right.
So we don't know who that is. We have no cognizance of what's going on there. Well, you're right. Let's not talk about the bodega scene because it's huge in the preview. And honestly, I love the majority of it. There's one moment where she's like, we need the keys. It was really stupid.
Yeah.
He then just plows through the door, no problem, when he's escaping. But I thought it was really tense to see Ghostface now with a shotgun and not his usual.
Agreed. Was this the first time, aside from Stu having a... No, not sorry. Does Billy... Don't they have a gun in the beginning?
Yeah, there is.
To shoot each other, and then number one, just to shoot each other in the arms.
But they're never using it explicitly to kill.
Correct.
Well, yeah.
So, outside of that, this is the first time we've ever seen.
He's adaptable in this one, and I liked that, especially because...
I agree.
Bodegas, I've been in New York City bodegas, they're so...
Yeah.
And just like, you could hear a pin drop, and it really worked, I felt.
Yeah, they play into that a lot, too, with the just hiding and the sound and the... innocent people just getting killed because they're in the way.
And...
The shop owner...
Yeah, the shop owner and just the customer tries to stick up for her and just like see it coming, some random person just suddenly getting stabbed so quick there in the neck. Very grisly, very entertaining and freaky scene that follows the scene where she's called. They're called on the street together, the sisters, right? And you answer, but she answers it anyway. Like, you're going to die. No, you're going to die. And then he of a bush or whatever.
My question
is, with this grand scheme that we learn about at the end, would he have actually killed them then? Does it make sense for the killer to be killing them at this point chronologically in terms of their grand plan? You know what I mean? That's something that,
I understand.
Just me. It's like, why are you going after them right now if you do have this bigger narrative in mind?
Right.
I guess. If it would have been smart maybe if in that moment when he jumps out of the bush or in the shop, the bodega, you killed Tara. Okay, fine. Then we run with Sam.
Right.
But from my perspective, I almost feel like Tara's going to be the bigger character in the next one. And if she wasn't...
I think so, too. I think you're right. But I also, for the sake of argument, I think he had to start terrorizing them early on. Whether or not he was going to kill them, we don't see them obviously get killed early. You still needed to create that cat and mouse.
Yeah. Well, before we, after we get through kind of these more fun scenes, I want to talk about which of the killers do you think was when, where, sort of thing?
Yes. I mean, you always have to wonder that in these movies, like the feats of strength.
So let's talk some other retreads going on here. Of course, we get the Red Right Hand. Is this the first movie since the first movie that we get to hear that song?
No, I honestly think they've used it in every movie.
Yeah, okay, all right.
I think so. And it's another great way of just keeping things tied together.
Cool. I can't remember it being used too much in other ones. Okay, and the phone call in the park, right? Straight out of Scream 2, and they even mention it. This is how Randy got killed in Scream.
Right.
Pulled into the van. We're dealing with the van and everything. We have Hayden Panettiere at this point, don't we? We have her coming as FBI.
Yes.
What did you think about Hayden entering this picture?
Here's the thing. I'm a fan of hers. Yeah. I'm really glad they brought her back. Did I buy into the fact that she's an FBI agent? Not necessarily.
Neither did I. As Gail put it, you look like a zygote. That was one of the best lines of the movie.
But what would we have believed? That, I mean, I think cop, maybe, but I don't know. Something about her, it just doesn't scream authority.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's why, like, I almost did half believe when our detective says that she was kicked out of the FBI, or, you know, she wasn't
admitted
at all. She's right. Like, okay, maybe this is the direction they could have gone. I would have been really disappointed if it turned out to be her in the end, because I don't like the
same
of somebody cracking under pressure and then suddenly becoming a killer. I definitely have
too easy
the motives going on in our killers here, but let's not jump ahead. What about the fireball? Fireball feels like it's coming up and everything. At the party at the beginning, Tara's going to go upstairs with the guy and drink some Fireball. I don't know. Have you heard about...
I don't know. I think it's a little dated. I think it had its moment.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's some woman who bought Fireball, like a crap ton, from Walgreens, and then learned that the Walgreens Fireball has no alcohol in it. But
really?
Yes, it's very strange. Anyways, I'm just wondering if it was... Walgreens Fireball. Nevertheless, I'm going backwards here. Let's ahead and talk about one of my favorite deaths ever in all of the Screams, which was poor, poor Annika. We have the love interest of Mindy. You know, not
right
fleshed out, but her character does get gutted, essentially. I think there was a missed opportunity, though, because this is the character that... ultimately falls off the ladder when Ghostface is shaking the ladder as they're climbing across to the boyfriend's. What's the boyfriend's name? To the boyfriend's.
They call him like cute guy or something. But yeah, he has a real character's name, Danny. Danny.
Yeah, they made such a point of gutting Annika, like seeing that moment where they cut from
going up.
If she was on that ladder and he shook it, they missed the opportunity for the guts to like start.
Guts to fall out
of her through the ladder and just like be dangling in her. Missed opportunity that I think might have gone to NC-17 at that point, perhaps.
Yeah, I think they probably did have a version like that,
right? That I mean, for them to spend so much time on how much that she was, you know, skewered, but I was satisfied with the head on the dumpster edition.
Oh yeah, that was another moment where you just kind of like ooh,
yeah
ouch.
That was something.
That's gotta hurt.
There's only one more legitimate, like, death after this of anybody that's not a killer, which is kind of weird, I feel like. Because in the end, we...
Yeah.
Greg, Jason, at the top, we have our Samara Weaving.
Yep.
We got the two guys in the bodega, which we really don't care about, right?
Right.
Quinn, obviously, we learned... Spoiler alert, doesn't die. And Annika, and then Doc Stone. What do you think about the
angle
dealing with Sam's background and this psychiatrist, essentially, when he finds out...
Really, it's terrible.
I can't do it. It's just...
Yeah, I've got to report this.
You got to go. I love that, Bob.
No. And was the whole point just for another death? I mean, it was a good death. The knife
thing that then came of it was then when they do kill him, and yeah, through the window...
Uh-huh.
In the nose or whatever. They got him in the nose.
Yeah, like right in the face.
They take her file, so I get this is our killer trying to set it up to make it look more and more like Samantha is the killer and that she didn't actually kill everyone back then.
Right.
And that was okay. I mean,
yeah.
For me, this movie is all about the tense Ghostface sequences where he's terrorizing more than anything else. I find a lot of plot holes and a lot of issues with the motives, but let's move to probably the most iconic one, which is the train, right?
Hands down, yes. I mean, I will say I was a little happy how this played out in the movie versus the trailer, because in the trailer, you feel like you've seen too much. You know, like, great, I just saw... They're all on the train with Ghostface. They did a really great job of sort of misdirection. There are two different or subway trains, and the homage to like all the horror icons is great. You got like Pinhead.
You got
Michael Myers.
Have you heard of this movie Tethered? Apparently, there's this character from Tethered in it. I'm gonna be watching.
Oh,
and because that was in it, must have really liked it. But you're right.
Sounds like we need to watch it.
Samara Weaving from Ready or Not in the background. Their little bridal dress. That one was just so fun to see all of the different characters all in one place. And of course, this is after they get separated, somewhat suspiciously. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a bit. we can just start delving into spoilers, I think, at this point.
Sure.
There's no way that it was Ethan that stabs Mindy on the train, right? Quinn must have been there with him on the train.
Quinn had to have been the other Ghostface, yes.
That's the only thing.
Because at this point, we don't know that Quinn's alive. Quinn's in the background. They don't want to show the father too soon. So it had to have been Quinn, yes.
Yeah, I think that's the only option there. Interesting little Easter egg, though. I read about how Quinn's boyfriend that she's getting it on with, the voice,
mm-hmm.
you hear a little bit during their first...
Right.
Tim Robinson. They get
really
Robinson to do the voice of her boyfriend. That was kind of a neat little Easter egg there. A lot.
That is fun.
This one. Yeah, so we lose Mindy then. Even though we are skipping the fact that we had found this tribe prior to losing Mindy, right? We go to this theater twice. One is pre-train and one is the finale, right? The beginning is when we get to see all of the different ghost face robes and masks. And I did love that Ghostface was leaving behind the masks of all the killers along the way.
That was fun. That was a really fun, but almost gives you the idea that this is like the main, this is the conclusion. There's not going to be any movies after this if you're doing a countdown.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And I loved all the additional Easter eggs, like the shrine, the Richie shrine.
Yeah.
It was a little silly when his dad, who's our third killer detective, is all, yeah, Richie was an amazing collector and he couldn't have collected all those without his dad's access to evident, so.
Right, which they even joke about, and he's
right
there.
That's what I kind of did like, is they very overtly point to how the killers were the killers before we learned who the killers were, you know?
Right.
In other ones, I feel like. In this one, they were much more overt about it. Some fun stuff. You get Stu's TV in there. You got the checker shirt Jill wears in 4. You get tape.
Different knives.
Where she gets killed in the elevator, or not the elevator, but the garage door.
Right.
It was really fun for, you know, fans like us to get to see all of these little props and such on display together. I did enjoy that. That being said, I did not love our finale. Did you?
You're talking about being locked in this theater scene?
That all seemed really convoluted to me.
Yeah.
I don't know why they would go to the killer's lair, essentially, to try to kill the killer. I struggled with that. And I mean, are we at the point we can talk about whether or not we liked what was going on with these killers?
Yeah, let's, yeah.
As noted, we have 3 killers here.
Right.
I will say, at one point, we see Chad with Tara and they get their first kiss. And then we have 2 ghost faces come up and are stabbing him at the same time. Is that the only time in all the series that we've seen 2 ghost faces at once? Making a kill, or it almost
yeah, because they do that double knife swipe, which is really cool. I think you're right. I think that's a really, really great question. And
as far as I can tell, that was the only time we've seen 2 on the screen at the same time outside of when we know who's the killers.
Which is why it felt like such a big moment when they both cleaned the knife off at the same time. I think they were really kind of showing you that this is the first time.
Right. And Chad should have died. He should be dead. I'm sorry.
Yes.
The second movie in a row that Chad should be dead.
Yes.
Or my ass. I don't give a darn about this.
Core 4.
He needed to be dead. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But Tara's got to have her love interest come set.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I think he should have been dead. And I don't think our characters have happy endings.
No. No. Even Gale, I feel like, should be dead. This is what I struggled with the second half of the movie, is there's so many almost deaths, right?
Yeah.
Gale. I thought, like, she had finally gotten to talk to Ghostface on the phone, right?
Yeah.
Her boyfriend is slaughtered. I guess I did forget. That's an additional just slaughter. Her boyfriend's dead.
Yeah, that's right.
Such a throwaway character. But she had such a great sequence in her apartment. With what would seem, I think there was two Ghostfaces there, right? I think we had...
There had to have been two, yes.
Yes, because Ethan was not with them at the park, I don't, right? So it was Ethan and Quinn, which makes sense with the gunshots and such. And now she seemingly hit one, but then another one comes at her.
Right.
Yeah. Because Quinn, I'm sorry, Detective definitely wasn't there. Quinn and Ethan, I think, were there too.
Because he was at the park still when they left, and they took his car.
Exactly. Which was another weird moment, because if he's the killer, he's all like, that's illegal. You can't take a cop car.
Yeah.
Believed when he was one of the killers, because I was so unimpressed with Dermot Mulroney's acting when his daughter had died. I was like, this doesn't seem right. You
know, you
better job acting than this.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But it made sense in the act, because... She did.
Yeah, but yeah, I think that would have been a great send-off. And I think, you know, because Dewey, if he dies in the previous movie, it makes sense in these sequels to start killing off main cast members.
Kill Nev in the next one if she does come.
Yeah,
but
yeah, exactly.
I just felt like Gale was a little superfluous. I know she was central in leading to the lair, to the movie theater, but I don't know. The whole getting punched again, she's written another book. It just was the wrong kind of redundancy, the wrong kind of homage to me. It didn't need that at all. As much as I love the character, I thought she
was
such a kick-ass kill scene that it just...
Yeah, agreed. I completely agree with you. And... No, I was just going to say, back to the final...
Yeah.
Layer, and you asked me how I felt about it, and I thought, you know, this was the version of the house in the first movie, although, you know, because upstairs, downstairs, but they were locked in the most ridiculous way. Like they had described, like, when they get in this one, this door locks, and like, how did you get that set up? I don't like that when characters have this technology that's ridiculous.
I agree. It just was lackluster. It's so hard to pull off, you know, the end.
Of course.
Once it's been revealed, it's like so anticlimactic at that. Speaking of which, did you like our killers and killer motives?
This one made me question things like, I'm going to go back and rewatch 5 and find out if Richie was from New York. Otherwise, now you're telling me that this family moved to New York too?
I agree. I didn't buy it. Maybe just the dad, okay? But when you... two additional siblings that are then willing to murder people for their brother, you know, I don't think mentioned them at all. It didn't sit well with me. I like the idea of three killers, but to have three people that are going to have a good enough motive other than we loved our brother... and we don't want him to be blamed for the things that he actually did, I didn't like it. What I did actually like on the second time that I was going through it was, at first I thought it was over the top, but Dermot Mulroney was really kind of channeling a Skeet Ulrich in his angry explanation.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah, I could see that.
By Quinn. I didn't buy Ethan. I liked the twist on Quinn not being dead, but at the same time, I loved most of it up until we got our killers, and it's hard to pull that off.
I'd say out of that whole sequence, the only thing that I did like was that Kirby wasn't the actual killer, and we had already mentioned that, but I just want to double down on the fact that I was almost mad when I was sitting in my seat watching it, and when they say, it's Kirby, and then they even say, no, duh, or something like that, because you're like, well, no, she didn't do it.
She had no motive to do it.
Dumb. What do you think about this powerful moment, if it is one, where You have Sam and Tara hanging from the balcony, and she literally has to let her go.
I am very the young adult.
And they tried to make it seem cool. Let me go because I'm holding a knife.
I didn't like the dynamic with the whole, you're too clingy. Why wouldn't she be? You guys are almost...
Yeah. You guys are part of a major murder serial killer case.
Only thing that was kind of cool is that we have a reflection of the second one where it was Billy's mom who's the killer.
Right.
And now we have Rick's dad who's the killer. Which means I think in the third one we're dealing with a sibling a la Roman. The theory that sounds the smartest to me that I heard from the Nerdist was that cute guy across the hall, he's another brother. He's part of the fam. And he had brought the cops in at the end because he thought everything would be done and they were going to blame Sam for everything. Because you might point out that, hey, he got them across the alley via the ladder, but they needed to get people that were going to survive out of there so they could switch out the body of Quinn's to make everything work. There's a couple other things involved with the likelihood of Danny being our likely killer in 7, being the brother, similar to how Roman was the brother. I don't want that to be the case, but
no,
I would suggest people go to the Nerdist to hear this theory because it's really, it's pretty strong. I hate to say it.
I mean,
there's a strong possibility of it, because otherwise let's talk about what other relatives are out there that have been talked about but not drawn upon much at all. Because,
well, before I do that, you could easily say that this girl that Quinn killed to double as her body could in theory be a number 7, you know, family. Like, you killed our daughter. Yeah, I mean, so there are characters in this movie that you could go in another direction, but other killers that you are talking about that are still out there?
No, just potential relationships that...
Potential relationships.
Like, because if you remember in Scream 5, the guy in the bar who then gets killed with the whole headlight thing, that's Stu's nephew of his old sister. So we got Stu's older sister that's been looked
through
too. We also have their mom, Sam and Tara's mom, is mysteriously, like, out of the picture. I mean, she is the one that, you know, left with Bill.
We talked about that in our last podcast as well.
Feel like there's...
Go back and listen to that.
Evidence there that could be explored as well. And even Tara's dad, we don't know anything about him. We know that Sam's dad is Billy, but who's Tara's dad?
Right.
You? You know, I always look...
I mean, they definitely have options to take Scream 7 in another direction and tie it back to Woodsboro if they wanted to. Now, because here's the real question for number 7. Where do you go, literally?
Well, the third one went to Hollywood, right? So I think you're going to have to do something with whatever job I've next, or internship or something. But I'm not sure. That's tricky, because the first two are following. You got Woodsboro for 1 and 5. You got now college for 2 and 6. So if you're going to Los Angeles for the third one,
right?
Why would they go to LA though? I'm not sure. Maybe they get involved in, if Dale's still alive, they're going to get some money themselves and, you know, making the movie version of theirs. I don't know.
Right.
If it's going to retread the Hollywood angle or not, I think it would be really hard. I think you're saying,
yeah, just
personally, I think you're saying.
Yeah, it just seems, you know, kind of crazy. You either have to stay in New York, because you can't just keep jumping from city to city. I mean, I guess you could, but I don't think they would. So you got to do that. You got to go back to Woodsboro, or you got to go, like you just said, to Hollywood. And I think you're right. Or I guess you could, in theory, these characters you just mentioned that we don't know about, you've got fathers and absent, you know, we might go to their hometown, wherever they're at.
Given how much there was manipulation of news in this one to make Samantha seem like the killer, and knowing now that Gail is kind of like Jean Pauley, or I don't know, it's bad, Savannah Guthrie now of news in New York,
right.
Maybe it is in the way we had the movies in Scream 3, maybe we're dealing with kind of Tara's a intern at Channel 7 or whatever.
Right. Or a Making a Murderer version of their story, like a Netflix show within it, like meta it.
For sure. That's hopefully the idea.
Yeah. Having said... Yeah, go ahead.
What were you saying? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, having said all that, I had a lot of fun with it still. I mean, the kills are fun. I like that they were able to take it to New York and do it successfully and not like, Jason goes to Manhattan is silly.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't make sense for him to be there, but they did a good job, you know, and sure, there are some holes and some, but they're, that's fine. You know,
it's drama. What do you expect sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Intense kill scenes. That's really all I can ask for at this point. I did put in order for me, in terms of the movie as a whole, this falls at the fourth for me. I like the first one, then the third one, the fourth one, then this one, then 5, and 2 remains my least favorite. But in terms of the motive and the killers, this is my second to least favorite.
Wow. Okay.
I just didn't love. And yeah, the third movie's killer, Roman, is the worst. You can't get worse than the long-lost brother who's jealous of his sister getting love.
Yeah.
But,
right.
This is just one step above that one. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It was definitely worth the watch, and I'm looking forward to them hopefully bringing something new in the 7th. Right?
Yeah, they will. They will. There's just me straight up. Jason Voorhees is there.
I'd be up for it.
On the subway again.
But I think I'm tapped on the screen front.
Yeah, me too.
Just for the late release on this one, but hopefully y'all have stayed alive in the interim.